Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce Conway. Today's topic is going to be Alaska Airlines Mileage Plan. This is a super underrated program, often overlooked, wide appeal, fantastic if you know how to use it. I guess I'm kind of sharing the highlights here as we go, but it's an incredible program that most folks overlook or have very little experience with, and I myself have pretty limited experience with. But when you dive into it, it's pretty incredible. So we're going to cover kind of the highlights here, how to earn and redeem these miles, some sweet spots, how to get the most value out of everything. And that's kind of going to be the subject of the rest of the show. Before we do dive in, though, I do want to remind everyone that if you're brand new to Points and Miles and you're not quite to a point where you're ready to start learning about the fringe programs, go back and check out episodes 1 through 6 of our show. We covered the fundamentals of this hobby. It's kind of like an audio version of our course. You'll learn a lot of the basics. It'll help you get started and help all this make a lot more sense. And also join our 10X Travel Insiders Facebook group. This is the largest Points and Miles community on the internet with over 350,000 members at the moment, asking questions, talking about the podcast, providing feedback on Travis's lovely plaid shirt that our YouTube watchers can see here today. Great space to just hang out and learn more. So, like I mentioned, today's episode, we're breaking down the Alaska Airlines Mileage Plan. What makes this program unique? How to earn and redeem miles with Alaska, which is actually somewhat tricky. How to maximize your miles with partners like Cathay Pacific and other affiliated airlines. And some practical tips and some of our favorite sweet spots for how to use these miles. Travis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be back. I know that our lovely audience Well, they heard about it, but our last two episodes, I believe, were recorded before I left on my trip. Now I'm back from my trip. For you guys and gals out there, I guess you probably didn't miss me. Maybe in spirit. Just know that there was a point where I was on a trip, and now I'm back. And I'm excited to be, I was going to say back in the recording studio, but it's not really a studio. Just glad to be back.
Hey, anywhere you record is a recording studio. I'm going to ask my grandma to like crochet that on one of those cute little cloth things you hang on the wall. This room is a recording studio instead of this house is a home. There we go. Sell that on Etsy. I feel like we can't leave that stone unturned. How was the trip?
It was pretty good, honestly. True feedback, it was a little bit different than I expected. I admittedly kind of went in... I'm sure some people are going to yell at me in the comments about this, but I kind of went in expecting Seychelles to be somewhat similar to the Maldives, especially the Waldorf, right? It's on its own island. And it wasn't. And that was kind of a little disappointing for me at first. Surely everyone out there knows by now, I love going to the Maldives. So kind of expecting a similar experience and then not like it was similar in some aspects, but it was different enough to where it took me about 4 days to kind of accept it and settle in and just get into the flow there. Once I did that, I still really enjoyed it. Would I go back? I mean, I think it's a great property. I would encourage anyone to go there. I actually really think that it's a great property for anyone with kids. They've got a ton of kids activities, like a bunch of kids kind of bonding through the kids club and everything. But I want to go back to the Seychelles, but I want to go to some of the different islands to experience a bit more of what makes the Seychelles, which is a little bit easier when you're on some of the main islands rather than one that's exclusive to one resort. But overall, it was great. Got to fly Ethiopian, which was not my favorite business class experience.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah. Emirates, though, man, this was actually my first time flying Emirates business class on the A380, and I loved it. I think it gets a lot of shame. I think a lot of it just comes down to Emirates first class versus business class are totally different worlds. But I really liked it. There were a lot of aspects about it I enjoyed, and I would certainly not hesitate to fly it again. I think I put it in higher regards than a lot of people typically do.
Yeah, I feel like Emirates business class is treated as like flyover territory for folks in first on the A380, just walking back to the bar.
Yeah.
Which is a very long walk on the A380, but Yeah, that's generally my experience too with Emirates Business Class on the A380. It's just that's where I walk through to get between my amazing first class seat and shower and the bar, and which of course makes it look bad for all the same reasons why any artist that opens for Taylor Swift seems like they're not talented, right? Hey, you're just next to something that's epic. But glad to hear that. Sounds like that was a very polite way of saying like, yeah, take it or leave it. Yeah. Not going to return. But I mean, I guess gratitude for being in a position where you can be, it takes you 4 days to accept the fact that you don't have your own island and indeed have to share that with other folks. And that's the nature of trips once you learn points and miles. So yeah, thanks for updating us on that. I know our audience was thrilled, especially the ones who regularly share comments criticizing us for first world problems. This one will be a good snippet that they can clip, but that's points and miles.
I'll accept it. I'll accept all of the trash that I get in the comments for the first world problem of the Waldorf Astoria in the Seychelles not quite living up to what I expected it to.
Nice. I'll tell you quickly about a trip I took over the break as well. I took my family to Portugal. We flew TAP. Is it TAP or TAP? I always hear it both ways. But
honestly, I do not know. I always say TAP.
TAP. All right. We'll go with TAP. Flew TAP from Newark to Porto and then home from Lisbon on their business class product. And I had very low expectations, not going to lie. It's a domestic narrow body plane. Like it feels like you're boarding just any other flight to like Los Angeles or whatever. So a small plane, business class is just two and two. So you don't have aisle access in the windows, but that's, one rows alternate, one, two, one, two. So you do have some strange seats that are considerably better than others. But I kind of liked it. It was nice to be able to board the plane in like 30 minutes. I was the closest seat to the door. So I was off the plane almost the moment we landed. Nice. Seats lie flat, entertainment system was good, food was decent. And the flight was relatively short because we repositioned New York and we're only flying to Porto or Lisbon. So pretty much the closest points on the Atlantic to each other, maybe 6.5 hours in the air. Easy way to get to Europe in a ward space, not hard to find.
Yeah, well, I imagine, especially with the kids as well, makes it a little bit easier for the two of you, right? Because otherwise you're either in kind of different rows or like you have the middle aisle separating you. I've seen in some of your pictures where one of y'all's on the left, one of you is on the right. And so having just the single aisle probably makes it a little bit easier as well.
Sure. In the seating configuration, easily like kind of assist your kids right next to you. So that, I mean, for families and like for points and miles value, really hard to beat if you're heading to Europe. You do, of course, have position to the East Coast, but not hard when you live in Ohio. Yeah.
I mean, when you live in Ohio, I think that repositioning is just a fact of life almost.
It is. Although I think I've mentioned this in the podcast before, I always joke with my sister who lives in Manhattan that I can get to look or JFK faster than she can. Like you're just probably repositioning from Manhattan out to the airport. So similar amount of time. So starting out, what is the Alaska Airlines mileage plan? Travis, you want to hit us with the basics here, or you want me to run through these?
No, I'll take it here. Alaska is a program that, kind of before getting into the specifics, I think a lot of people know the name of, but for the longest time didn't have any transfer partners. We'll talk about that here in a bit. And there, people knew about specific aspects of the value of the program without knowing a ton of details about it. Let's hit some of the quick highlights about Alaska's mileage plan program. It's one that, once you're familiar with it, can really get some really good value out. Now, one thing to keep in mind if you're out there Googling, reading stuff about Alaska, is over the past 2 years, Alaska has made a lot of changes to their program. I would probably say generally for the better, although there are some things that were lost there. But you might see some different information out there. So just be sure that if you're researching outside of just listening to us, that
why would you do such a thing?
I don't know.
We never make mistakes.
What? Us? if you're looking into other stuff, you might see some different information because of some of the key changes made in the past, call it year, 2 years. One really, really unique thing though about Alaska is the way that you earn miles whenever you're flying with Alaska. most airlines, the miles they earn, it's going to be a, you get what we call a revenue-based system, whereby you earn points and miles based off of the cost of your ticket. So if you're flying from Houston to Paris and your ticket costs $100, they might only award you, let's say, 500 miles, because they give you 5 miles for every $1 spent. Alaska has retained what a lot of programs started off with, which is a distance-based award, award earnings.
That's why they're called miles in the first place, right? They all started that way.
Yeah, like back in the day, you got like one frequent flyer mile for each mile that you flew. Alaska still is that way. It's still a distance-based earning, so you earn miles based on the distance flown, not the ticket price, which means that flight to Paris, I don't know how many miles that is. I'm going to say 4,000.
Yeah. I only know this because of my recent flight to Portugal was just under 4,000 miles, so I think I'm guessing 6.
Okay. We'll go
but 6. I'm going to Google it.
Okay.
You keep going.
Google it. Yeah. So we'll say 6 until Bryce tells us the correct answer. In that case, maybe you would earn 5, right in between.
5,000 miles. Yep.
All right. We're pivoting back to 5. If you're still with us, Houston to Paris, 5,000 miles. It doesn't matter what you paid for the ticket. You would earn 5,000 miles because you flew 5,000 miles. It really is a unique program in that it gives you the opportunity to arbitrage these flights where you can find a low price for a long flight and earn a ton of miles. I'll actually talk about a way that I did that later on. Another key feature about the Alaska program is that they finally joined an alliance. They officially joined the One World Alliance in 2021, which I actually had to Google this because that felt way too long ago.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
The pandemic has just really distorted my perception of time in the travel world. But it was 2021 when they formally joined One World Alliance. I felt like it was just last year. So it's going on 4 years now. Oh my goodness.
Now I feel old.
4 years. So that means that it has access to all 14 airlines like British Airways and Qantas. So the big takeaways of why you should really care is Alaska. If you are a business traveler in Alaska or American, so since it's part of One World, you can fly on American and credit those flights to Alaska now. If you're doing any paid travel, crediting to Alaska might make more sense than American. Take a look and figure that out as to where you're gonna earn more miles. So people who are frequently booking revenue tickets, cash tickets, being familiar with Alaska, even if you're flying American, could be really beneficial. But for those of you who aren't doing that and are just earning points without stepping on a plane, which I suspect is the vast majority of you, it's a great program to be familiar with. They've normalized their award charts, and we'll talk about those award charts here in a bit. There's some really nice perks, like a free stopover perk. And you have some access to some really nice products like Cathay Pacific First Business Class, Japan Airlines First Business Class that you can redeem their miles for. So that's kind of the 6,000 foot view, if you will.
It's a pretty straightforward program, right? Like there's not a ton of nuances here, especially now that they're in an alliance. Like for the longest time, Alaska felt almost like the Notre Dame of like college sports, where it's like you're not in a conference, like you're a big player and there's a lot of perks here, but like you have no conference. But now that them being in One World has made a huge difference, and props to Alaska for not taking that period of time and just cutting all the things that made it great. They're still hanging on to a lot of these. Of course, you know, the merger with Hawaiian kind of opens up a whole new angle on their points and the ability to get them from transfer partners, and just overall straightforward, fair, valuable program.
It is. I mean, it's so straightforward that when we were looking at this outline and researching for this episode, we were asking ourselves, do we even have enough to talk about to fill a whole episode because of how much they've streamlined? I think that Alaska did a really good job on putting together their new program. while retaining some of what makes it special and unique.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one additional perk that people love about the Alaska program is the free stopovers. You can add a destination to your journey at no extra cost. So like, for example, if you want to fly like Seattle to Anchorage, Alaska, you can add a stopover in Juneau for 12,500 miles. And I believe it's 14 days is the time frame that you can stay for it to be a qualified stopover, which is long enough for most folks who aren't doing the crazy around the world tickets where a round trip is actually being used as two separate one ways for two different trips and that sort of thing. But yeah, it gives you that kind of flexibility for multi-destination stops. And Alaska's, you know, route network is pretty good, particularly in the West Coast. And of course, the Airline Alliance kind of opens up a lot more opportunity there. So let's talk about earning Alaska miles. A few different ways to do this, and they're all kind of pretty typical with earning any airline's miles. The first, of course, is flying on Alaska Airlines and their partners. As Travis mentioned, they run a distance-based award program, so it's not based on spend. A 6,000-mile flight is going to earn you 6,000 miles. So you do get a minimum of 500 miles per flight. I don't know what, I guess, and now I'm curious, what's the shortest Alaska Airlines flight? I'm sure they have like some intra-Alaska one that's only a few hundred miles.
They probably have a like... Yeah, that's a good question. I was going to say probably like LA to San Francisco or something, but
that's almost certainly it, right? So if you book direct on AlaskaAir.com, you get guaranteed 100% miles earned on partner flights. And as usual, if you have an elite status, you can get additional miles up to 125% bonus for the top tiers, which Alaska status also not nearly as hard to earn as other airlines. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. You do have your usual shopping, hotel, and dining portals. Just kind of clicking through these is going to earn you additional miles on the things you're already buying online. Alaska Airlines does have its own shopping portal where you can earn those mileage plan miles when shopping with various partner vendors. So next time you're buying something online and kind of going through that portal process, do consider Alaska, particularly with the value of their miles and how hard they are to earn in other ways. They have a dining program that you can sign up for, super simple, covered in our course on kind of how to do that. If you just Google Alaska Airlines mileage plan dining and follow the prompts, you're good to go. And you can do stays with Alaska Vacations. That's a travel portal that you can use to earn Alaska miles on hotel stays around the world. So it's a nice way to earn a few Alaska miles by kind of double dipping. But you know, this is a newer portal launched late in 2024. And generally, it offers lower rates than the old portal did, which was powered by Rocket Miles. But I feel like portal earnings are always just like a nice little, it's almost like the interest you earn on like your checking or savings account. It's like, oh, that's just like, it's a little bit that comes in here and there, but no one's going to be booking free flights based on their activity with those dining plans or vacation programs.
No, well, and it's, I still think 90% of the time for most people using Rakuten is just an easier option. Right. If you do have the ability to link it to earn flexible points, it just
actually there's a path there now because Rakuten earning the flexible points that you can opt to do so transfer to Hawaiian, transfer over to Alaska. So then they've already defeated their entire portal by doing that.
That's true. Yeah.
Boom.
So I looked it up. How long do you think is the shortest Alaska Airlines flight?
146 miles.
That would not even be in the top 10 shortest Alaska Airlines flights.
Is it 2 miles? Is that the Kylie Jenner route from LAX to Burbank?
31 miles from Petersburg, Alaska to Wrangell, Alaska.
31 miles. So what's the flight time on that? Like 9 minutes?
27 minutes is what.
27 minutes? I could drive that far in 27 minutes.
And it's at least... February 1st through February 5th, it's $268. So this is one where having a revenue-based program would probably be a little bit nicer.
But minimum of 500 miles, remember?
Oh, that's true.
So
that's
boom. True, yeah. Actually, could you just fly that back and forth, and earn a bunch of miles?
I mean, probably, but for $261,
yeah,
only we got 500 miles, you're paying 50 cents per mile.
Yeah. Scrap that idea. Sometimes I mention just bad ideas without thinking them. I don't know, listeners, if you've noticed that. I do that a lot.
Let's talk about some good ideas, right? Let's talk about some of probably the most common ways to earn Alaska miles. Of course, things like shopping portals and flying are some of the easy ones. But the most common way that those of you listening are going to be looking to earn Alaska miles are going to come from co-branded credit cards and transfer partners. Co-branded credit cards have typically been the historical bread and butter, because for the longest time, no flexible currencies transferred to Alaska, either directly or indirectly. The co-branded credit cards were the only way of really earning Alaska miles. So that's part of what made Alaska so unique for a while, was their miles were relatively hard to earn because you only had one personal and one business card to choose from. And the only other way to really earn them is through flying Alaska or their partners. And when they weren't part of the One World Alliance, it meant a limited partner network. But there was always some good value to be had there. The co-branded credit cards are certainly still a way to go. I think that it's a very common way for people to still earn them. But now you can transfer directly from one currency and indirectly from another. If you've earned points with the credit card in the program that typically rewards you for rent payments, those transfer one-to-one to Alaska now. So especially for renters, Alaska is a program you should certainly be familiar with if you're a part of this ecosystem. The other way, the kind of indirect way, as Bryce talked about earlier, is Alaska and Hawaiian are currently merging, and it's going to be under Alaska. What this has opened is an opportunity whereby you can transfer miles from Hawaiian into your Alaska program. They have to be able to go back and forth one-on-one. I think the Department of Transportation actually said that
they were required
to do that.
Good on them.
Yeah, good on them. And what that has created is an opportunity for flexible points that transfer to Hawaiian can then be transferred to Alaskan. I want to take a second just to kind of talk about this for context for people and just a little bit of caution. We don't know what's going to happen because of this merger in regards to the flexible points to Hawaiian. I would love for us to just see it become, oh, those flexible points transfer directly to Alaska now. We don't know if that's going to be the case or not. So this might be a limited time thing. What that causes in people is a sense of FOMO. They're worried that they're going to miss out on the ability to transfer these points to Alaska. And so they transfer them speculatively. I think I said that word right. I want to encourage you, as always, don't transfer points just out of FOMO. Only transfer if you know that there's a redemption that you're going to be taking. If there's one thing that Alaska is slightly notorious for, it's for changing and devaluing their program overnight. I think it was sometime in the 20-teens when they basically doubled the price for Emirates First Class when Emirates used to be a partner. Pretty much overnight with no notice. So in fact, we literally saw within the past week of recording that Flying Blue devalued overnight. And I'm thinking about the number of people who transferred points speculatively during a transfer bonus period, who essentially just lost out on that value now. So
a large number of people that did that too.
Large number of people. These are prime examples of why we advise don't give into the FOMO, only transfer whenever you need to. So if you have a need, and we're going to talk about some of the ways that you can redeem these miles here in a second. If you have that need and the availability's there and you're ready to book, it's perfectly fine to do it. But if you're just doing it out of speculation that you're going to use them later, those miles could really be locked, especially because of the unknown. I think that that's probably a bigger risk here, is we don't know what's going to happen once this merger is complete. You might not have the ability to transfer points in anymore. And so if you haven't used them by then, and there's a devaluation of some sort, your miles might be locked and you don't have enough to use them with very limited ways of getting more. So that's my rant I'll end it there of why you just need to be certain that you're ready to redeem those points before transferring them, and just don't worry about the FOMO.
Or at least comfortable with the risk. If you're uncertain and you want to take the risk, by all means, this is America, you can do that. But don't ask us how you can undo that if things go poorly, because the answer is that you cannot.
Yeah. You'll just have to earn more points to be able to use and redeem them, is what the answer will inevitably be. And if you don't have any of the other flexible currencies to transfer, you'll either have to open up one of the co-branded cards or go through some of those shopping portals or fly cash tickets to get there.
Yep. So bottom line, yeah, Alaska, a very typical setup. You got one personal co-brand card. You have one business co-brand card. You have the ability to earn them from a couple of flexible points ecosystems, one that's very direct right now, one that's a little bit more of like a temporary, I don't want to call it a loophole, but temporary opportunity, hopefully one that becomes permanent. And that's how you can kind of earn those miles. I will say, like, from a high level, Alaska Miles, and really Alaska's program in general, has a lot of the same vibes that you see with the American Airlines program, where it's like these miles have some use cases that are like fantastic and people are generally familiar with them and love them, but it's a little harder to earn their miles than most other programs. And that creates almost like that inevitable frustration of you see like the beautiful shiny object, but you can't get it in the quantity that you want. And if that's how you're feeling, you're not missing something. That's what it is. That's kind of how this area of the game works. But I will say that most people who dive into the Alaska program end up loving it and kind of come back and be like, I wish I would have known about this sooner, which is why we're doing this podcast today. So that's earning. Let's talk about redeeming Alaska miles. So of course, Alaska changed to a distance-based award chart in 2024, and it kind of standardized the award chart across all partners. So previously you had this whole hodgepodge where each partner had a different award chart and they were kind of all over the place. Now they all use the same chart. This did hurt some partner redemptions a bit. It helped some others. So, you know, winners and losers. But, you know, from Alaska's partners, I kind of view it as like their current situation now that they're no longer Notre Dame is that they almost have like their alliance plus is how I'd describe it, right? They're in the One World Alliance. So you have all the partners that would be in there. You know, American Airlines probably being the most familiar name to folks listening to this podcast, but many, many others. But you also have these kind of like unofficial, you can't call them partnerships, but relationships with Korean Air, LATAM, Condor, Fiji, Iceland Air, Singapore Air. So when redeeming Alaska miles for domestic award tickets, flights under 700 miles, like the one that Travis mentioned earlier, that was only, what was it?
31. You're still too far, by like 20%.
Yeah. So, well, flights under 700 miles, they start at 5,000 miles to redeem for that, which is pretty cool because it's like, if you fly pretty much across the continental US and credit that to Alaska, that gets you one free flight under 700 miles, potentially. Neat.
Yeah.
Medium haul flights start at 7,500 miles, and transcon flights, you're looking at 12,500 miles and up. So those are pretty reasonable rates, and those are actually pretty consistent with, I always kind of like think back to earlier versions of the course as I revise it, and like I always try to share, like, here's some kind of general guidelines on how much flights cost, and these are the guidelines that I shared in the early ebook in like 2011. So Alaska, while everyone else has kind of inflated somehow faster than the rest of world currencies, Alaska's still hanging out there, right where things used to be.
Yeah, I think their insularity as a program in terms of ability to earn points has kind of helped them not have to really compete with the other airlines, if that makes
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely. Although hopefully that won't change as their program has kind of evolved. Now they are competing. But for Asia business class, you're looking at redeeming 60,000 to 85,000 Alaska miles, depending on the distance that you're flying. Flying business class to Europe, you can find flights starting at 45,000 Alaska miles. So like JFK to Madrid, for example, if you're flying a shorter distance. For South Pacific business class, you can find flights starting at 60,000 miles. These are things like LA to PPT, for example. If you're heading down to visit some locations that would hopefully be more appealing to Travis than his Seychelles trip, very doable with Alaska miles. And then some premium cabin sweet spots, Cathay Pacific business class to Asia, 60,000 to 85,000 Alaska miles. Japan Airlines business class, JL, to North Asia, 60,000 to 75,000 Alaska miles. All very, very reasonable rates. Searching all these, at least in my experience, it seems like the Alaska Airlines site is going to be the only place you're going to have to go, unless you're kind of looking at some more of these kind of fringe partner award bookings. but it's straightforward. The prices make sense. Those are very reasonable rates. And yeah, that's, I have not redeemed Alaska miles for a international flight yet. I guess not that I can recall, but have you, Travis, booked any of these yourself?
I have. I've done it. I've redeemed Alaska miles twice for international flights now. One before the program changes and one after. The ones I booked before was I used, I believe it was 70,000 Alaska miles to book Cathay Pacific first class from JFK to Hong Kong. That was one of the highlights of Alaska's program for a long time. In fact, that whole redemption was crazy. It started off with a few years ago, a significantly discounted first class fare from Da Nang, Vietnam to New York round trip.
I remember that.
And I think it was like $700, and you got five, using Alaska's distance-based chart, so this is an example of the distance, you got 5 miles for every mile flown. So round trip, it was like 12,000 miles. So 5 miles of that, it's 60,000 miles. So you basically got enough miles for almost another first-class ticket. So for $700, I got to fly first class on Cathay Pacific, call it 2.8 times. I just had to get those other 10,000 miles.
That was like, what, 2019? I think that happened, right?
I think so. Right, it was definitely before the pandemic.
And there was like a narrow couple of months range. And the only thing I remember about that is Da Nang's airport code is DAD.
Yeah.
And so everyone kind of in the forums who's kind of like not trying to spill the beans on this would kind of say like, are you going to visit DAD soon? Yep, I'm visiting DAD. You visiting DAD? Heck yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was one of those crazy ones. You had to start in Vietnam. So we literally went to Vietnam for a weekend to start this. It just coincided with my birthday. I already had another trip to Asia planned, so I just canceled those flights, rebooked with those same miles to go for this weekend trip, so that way I could fly Cathay Pacific first class again. It was great. I would definitely do it again, but I share the example not because it's actually something that's realistically possible for people to go out and do and replicate at any time, but it kind of shows the benefits of the distance-based program and how earning miles for miles flown rather than what you pay can provide unique opportunities like this, as well as some good redemptions. Cathay Pacific's redemption is one that did get a little bit devalued during the changes. So it doesn't cost quite the same number of miles anymore. I believe now you're looking at like about 85,000-ish to 110,000 miles in Cathay First Class. So it was one that got hurt a little bit. But since the changes, I actually booked Finnair business class for later this year. I'm going to Europe this summer, and for my flight back, I'm going from Dublin, Ireland to Helsinki to Dallas. So the Helsinki to Dallas is on Finnair, and I believe it cost me 60,000 miles to book that. So
60,000 miles, and the period of anxiety that I'm sure you get when your itinerary has you flying in the wrong direction to then fly home. Oh, don't you love that?
I've flown way more in the wrong direction than that before.
Yeah. I mean,
it's on one itinerary is the nice thing, right? So
yeah,
that's kind of the saving grace of it, is that it's all on one itinerary. The weird thing about it was that Alaska's program actually cost more than American's program. So because of these changes, American would have cost me 57,500 miles, I believe. But I had some Alaska miles that I've had for, honestly, kind of a long time. And was looking to finally burn them. So I didn't mind spending a little bit more than I would have with American. I was also short on American miles. So,
as we all are, it seems, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so it may not have been the lowest number of points possible, but I had them sitting there for quite a while. it got the job done. So the changes kind of puts a lot of their international redemptions in line with other carriers, is really what we're seeing. And beforehand, some such as Cathay Pacific, which I know I keep calling out, were exceptionally underpriced compared to everyone else. Mm-hmm. I don't like to use the word underpriced. Maybe more fairly priced than everyone.
There we
else.
Go.
Everyone else's prices were too inflated. No, they were out of line with the pricing of other airlines, and the changes brought Cathay Pacific back up in line. But some of their other partners, like Korean Air, were insanely high and brought them down and back in line. So there's certainly still value to be had and to be found through the program. It's just maybe not the same as it used to be.
Yep, well said. So some kind of like pro tips and downsides to be aware of with the Alaska program. First pro tip, use the stopovers creatively. Like that feature is becoming more and more rare in redeeming points and miles. It's often difficult to use. Alaska makes it about as easy as possible. So you can plan multi-city itineraries for the same mileage costs. So one in-route stopover of up to 14 days is allowed per one-way on eligible international itineraries. And on a round-trip international itinerary, two stopovers are permitted with one in each direction of travel. So you could piece together, you know, four cities there on one itinerary and not pay any additional money. Fantastic for anyone who's looking to kind of hit multiple destinations on one single, hopefully lengthier trip, and not do the typical American thing where you go to Europe and visit 14 cities in 15 days.
I mean, if you're wanting to do... Right, Europe, obviously, but this could be a really good use around Asia as well. You know, some examples that kind of quickly come to mind. My mind keeps jumping as to what kind of the best is. You could do U.S. to Hawaii, stop in Hawaii, Hawaii to Tokyo, go do some travel around Japan, then go from Japan to South Korea and do some travel around Korea and then Korea back to the US. And so you would do Hawaii, Japan, and Korea all in one trip, and using the free stopovers, it wouldn't really cost you anything more.
And surely some more award space available now that Hawaiian is kind of in the mix there, at least for those first couple of legs. Yeah. So that's a great kind of on the fly sample that you came up with there that I now want to book.
You could do it backwards too, because Hawaiian actually flies from Hawaii to Seoul. So you
could that's actually, right.
Yeah, you could, I'd have to actually double check that they're still flying that route. I know they were a few years ago. But yeah, you could do it the other way as well. Thanks to the partnership to go to Seoul, then Japan Airlines from Seoul to Tokyo, and then Tokyo back to the US.
And also get a chance to kind of add a stop to break up that 16-ish hour flight to Asia, right? That's that alone would be worth more. And of course, you can book it for no additional miles here through Alaska. So you do, like with any airline, you do want to be booking early for the premium cabin awards. This is the Cathay Pacific, the JL are probably the two that are most sought after. These awards will often book out, you know, 6 to 12 months in advance, closer to 12 really in that range. You will occasionally find last-minute award availability on these routes. Really, I guess these, in my experience, these routes strictly adhere to our general advice of the best award space is kind of way in the future or last minute. But the worst of it is like 4, 5, 6-ish months ahead of travel. It's harder to find. So try to be on the ball there or be spontaneous and do it last minute. But things you do want to watch out for with their program is limited availability. You know, as I just mentioned, these premium awards do book out months in advance. Some partner awards would require you to actually call Alaska to book, so not quite as easy as some other programs that you might be familiar with. And watch out for the fuel surcharges, which do vary by partner. You know, British Airways is kind of the notorious one on this list. If you're flying on British Airways or really hitting London in any capacity, your taxes and fees just absolutely surge. So those are things you do want to be aware of. But running actual searches, in my experience, is relatively straightforward right there on the Alaska site. Good at finding all the availability, good at booking online and kind of managing everything. So they do make it easy despite those couple of limitations there. I did want to quickly mention mileage expiration policy, because you mentioned like had Alaska miles kind of sitting around, and I find myself in the same boat a lot. I believe that their current policy is miles do not expire as long as you have any activity within a 2-year period, which is effectively like miles don't expire if you're paying attention. It's kind of how I phrase this. You're probably going to organically have activity with them every 2 years, especially if we're transferring points or kind of doing some of the strategies we mentioned earlier. But even if you get to a point where you're getting that kind of email from Alaska Airlines, like, hey, your miles are about to expire, you have X number of days, that's when you hop in the shopping portal, so you join the dining program and go eat out one time. You know, it's easy to avoid expiration on these, so don't be worried about miles getting trapped there. And don't use that as the reason to start speculatively transferring for aforementioned reasons covered by Travis, but it's not something you have to worry about if you're parking miles in Alaska. Should we talk about some sweet spots?
Yeah, let's hit a few of the highlights a little bit more targeted rather than anecdotally.
Sure, yeah. Why don't you kick us off on that one?
Yeah, so as I've obviously mentioned, Cathay Pacific is... It's not as much of a sweet spot as it used to be, and availability can be harder to come by now. It used to be much more readily available. Mm-hmm. But it's still a great use of Alaska miles. If you're wanting to fly business class between the U.S. and Asia, you're going to see 60 to 85,000 miles. First class, not that big of a step up, 90 to 110,000 miles. So you're not paying a huge premium. It's like a 25 to 30% premium to step up to first class. And if you listened to our, maybe our last episode, actually, Cathay Pacific, my favorite first class. So I would certainly not hesitate to pay that premium, especially on some of those longer flights, the like 16-hour flights from New York. Absolutely worth it if you've got the miles, in my opinion.
Really, I think everything we're about to mention on the sweet spots list falls into that category of, if you see this and that's somewhere you want to travel, don't hesitate to pay this. This is as good as you're going to get redemption-wise. So we talked to Cathay Pacific. Next up, Japan with JAL Business Class. 60 to 75,000 miles, depending on where you're starting from. And of course, as Travis mentioned, a kind of a pro tip here is just add a stopover in Tokyo to explore the city before continuing anywhere else in Asia. That is an incredible deal, an incredible use of Alaska miles, and a common one that I see in my experience. And last but not least, this is the one that I've actually done, domestic flights and stopovers. So 12,500 miles for short haul flights. This is like Seattle to Anchorage, get a free stopover in Juneau. This is ideal for budget-conscious travelers looking for unique itineraries, or of course anyone who's looking to just travel domestically for any other reason. But I know my uses of Alaska miles have been first-class flights to New York, Columbus to New York, direct flying on American Airlines. I think it was 12,500 for first, which when I saw that, usually redeeming miles for domestic first is like, not your best choice. But that one was. So I've done that, and I've also used it a couple times to fly to the West Coast, also on American Airlines planes, although Alaska did recently add Columbus as a destination. Really? We can fly to and from Seattle, two flights a day. Yeah.
That's good to know.
It is. And their premium cabin domestic product is quite good on if you don't get one of like the much older planes. But like the new ones, the lighting is great, the food is great, cheese and fruit platters, kind of legendary. Consider me a fan.
Didn't like Amazon open a really big something in Columbus?
No, we were on like the top three list.
Okay.
I think they chose DC.
Gotcha.
But yeah, for a while there, we were all excited about it. Yeah, but and I'm that's about when that's this came. So maybe that I hope they don't pull it back. But yeah.
I mean, I've not used it for domestic ones, admittedly. But like that's the nice thing, right? When we're talking about sweet spots, but. The nice thing about Alaska's program is it's pretty competitively priced everywhere now. Whether you're looking to fly domestically or internationally in a premium cabin, it's still a pretty good program regardless. And especially the fact that for domestic flights, you can use it for flights on Alaska Airlines as well as American. Right? That kind of positions it pretty uniquely. Where you have multiple domestic and Hawaiian, really. So you have three domestic airlines that you can book with one program. If you're a frequent domestic traveler, it's probably a program that you should certainly familiarize yourself with.
Yeah, especially if you're currently in a position of like flying on American Airlines revenue flights frequently, you know, work, travel, yeah. whatever, you should strongly consider switching where you credit those and start putting all those in Alaska. I know definitely. I have, and I find myself in that bucket. So it's wonderful. To kind of wrap this up, we want to hear what your best Alaska Airlines mileage plan redemptions. Please share them in the YouTube comments or in the Facebook group or by any other means that you'd like on our socials. Kind of the key takeaways here, Alaska's mileage plan is perfect for earning redeeming miles, and you have some high-end premium partner uses from them as well. It's a straightforward program, easy, kind of user-friendly, easy to use if you're relatively new to points and miles. In fact, I would encourage you, listeners, even if you have no Alaska miles or experience whatsoever with their program, go ahead and enroll, create an account, and just kind of play with the searches. Like, just run some sample searches to places that you want to go, look at some different dates. That tends to really make it easier to understand how to think about the program, the value of their miles for your particular use, and just get some more reps in for running award searches. You know, the Alaska program stopover benefits and partner flexibility make it a standout. The pricing is straightforward, pretty simple to understand. Award space is not super difficult to find. The search process is relatively easy. It's kind of just a nice, simple program that pretty much anyone can get benefit from.
It is. And I mean, you mentioned the search being easy. Like, that feels, that's really understated. Like, if I'm ever searching on Alaska site, I really like it. It's easy to use, it's easy to navigate. My award availability is either there or it's not, and that just makes it so easy compared to other sites.
We won't. Are we gonna name names, or are we gonna
Nah, we won't.
Okay. Yeah, we'll give them a break. We'll just say Alaska does a good job. So yeah. Give the program a chance. Give it a look. I think you'll get a lot of value out of it. And of course, we're always here to help with questions and redemptions and all of that. So to kind of close things out here, don't forget to sign up for My10X, our free all-in-one web tool that makes points and miles simple for anyone. You'll find the course in there. You can easily link and manage all of your cards and points across many different programs. It'll remind you of upcoming annual fees. It'll help you with general strategy. That is the one stop to go if you want to level up your points and miles game. Of course, check out our website, 10xtravel.com, for in-depth guides and step-by-step instructions on booking Alaska award flights and others, kind of just generally learning more about the program. A quick shout out there to our AI-powered chatbot on the website. If you're, you know, don't necessarily just go to the site and just browse the most recent articles. I mean, we'd love if you do that. But if you're on a fact-finding mission for Alaska knowledge, open up that chatbot in the bottom of any page on our site and just ask it, hey, can you point me to some resources about Alaska Airlines miles? We have a bunch of them, and it will help you quickly locate them. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, rate us, give us 5 stars. Actually, that my new fun line that I like to say that I noticed the other day is that rating a podcast is pretty much the only time left in life where you push like 5 stars and you're not prompted to tip. Like when I've done that before, you click it, you just wait for tip 15, yeah. 18 or 20%. It's like, nope, just thanks for rating and move on with your life. It's surprisingly refreshing. Listeners, I encourage you to try that for yourself.
Speaking of tip, no, I'm not going to ask you to, I'm not going to drop my Venmo and ask you to send me a tip. Not only do you not have to tip, the tips are on us at our meetups. So
yes,
we've got our meetup scheduled for this year. Should be live on the website now. We're coming maybe to a city near you. We'll be in Houston and Chicago in April. We'll be in Columbus, of course. All of our Columbus May. Listeners yep. know that we're there every year in May. We'll be hitting up San Diego, San Francisco, and Seattle this summer. And this fall, we'll have some on the East Coast. We don't have those exactly locked in yet, but they will be on the site when they are. So if you want a chance to meet us in person, we'd love to see you there. And the drinks, the snacks, and the tips are on us.
Well said. But yeah, we enjoy this tremendously and look forward to seeing all of you in person, where you can come and say the fun line that we hear more and more now of like, I've only ever heard your voice before, but it's interesting to see you as a person. So yeah, that's always a fun experience. But Anyway, this has been Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. For Travis, I'm Bryce with 10X Travel. We appreciate you listening today. We will talk to you next time. Goodbye.